at noon, by the way. Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim will be holding their annual pre-draft press conference.
Well, we're looking at all our options. Everything's still on the table. We haven't put our board together yet. There's a lot of players that we like.
Okay,
we're considering...
Time out on the floor.
Yeah.
Time out. I'm going to take a 20 here, Coach, for a second. There's no way... Okay, they can say all of those things. There's no way they can say with a straight face they haven't put their board together.
We have a lot of... We're in the process of putting our board together right now.
We still
have players that we're visiting with. It's a lot of talent in this draft at the wide receiver spot, and... We're just looking to make this team better and improve. Whatever we could do to help the team improve, we're going to consider. I mean, yes, we could trade, obviously, it's a possibility.
Keeping all of our options open.
We could also keep the pick. We really like some of the defensive talent in this draft. And, just trying to make the team better.
I do wonder, okay, I get your point. It's made eloquently, as always, that we will not get a lot of concrete information. I do wonder, though, if they will at least acknowledge tomorrow. We obviously aren't going to tell you what we're going to do, but we know what we're going to do. Like, just acknowledge.
Oh, that's what you want. You want that.
I'd like to hear that.
We're going to do. We can't tell you, but we know what we're going
to
do.
I'd be curious to see if they're at least willing to go that far. We know what we're going to do.
My guess is no.
We're not going to tell you what we're going to do, and we're going to try not to let it get out what we're going to do. But we know internally exactly what we're going to, because there's been different schools of thoughts on this. We talked about this one on Friday. Mark Domenech, the guy who used to be the GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yes.
He came out and said, they know exactly what they're doing. By now, they know what they're
doing. I agree.
Peter King this morning in his Football Morning in America column said he's hearing that they're still not quite sure exactly what they're going to do over there, that there's not a unanimous thought in terms of it's going
to
be this
doesn't
guy,
need to
it's
be
going
to
be that guy.
Thought.
No, but
it doesn't need to be.
But you do if there's still. I think we should take this guy. I think we should take that guy.
Healthy conversation.
I think we should do that. Right.
Healthy conversation.
He's claiming that there is not a unanimous kind of thought right now in terms of what they're going
to
do.
Are you happy about that, or do you want them to have a unanimous thought? You think it'd be better if unanimously we all agree that this is what we should do?
No. I think there can be healthy discourse and debate and discussion. At the end of the day, it's going to be Steve Keim. He's going to be the one making the pick. I mean, his voice, his chair is the biggest. His voice is the loudest. He's got the most say in that room when it comes to it. No, I don't think everybody needs to be on the same page. But if we're this late in the process and Kingsbury saying, I think we should do this, and Michael saying, I think we should do that, and Keim saying, I think we should do this, I hope by now they know what their plan is. Whether they can execute the plan or not based off of what do we get for Rosen? What do we get for the number one pick? Are we going to trade out? Are we going to get this? Can they execute their vision, what they want to do? I hope by now they know what
Say Murray's not an option. Say they're going to keep Rosen.
Okay.
So then it really comes down to what we want to do is we want to take Nick Bosa. But if we get an offer that's too good to pass up, then we would trade the pick and not take Bosa, and then get somebody else later on. So that's probably what it is. I mean, the one thing I would say is I don't know that they truly know the value of what they could get for number one right now, because everybody's going to try to lowball you at this point. And as we get closer and closer and closer, then obviously when teams start to get a little bit more desperate, then that may increase. That would increase. That should increase.
I do wonder if you're hearing a lot of different things out there in the marketplace. What you heard over the weekend here on 98.7 FM, Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, both talking about how certain they are Kyler's going to go to Arizona.
I said for the last 3 weeks, I think it's 99%. Would you agree or disagree, Todd? And Chris, I'm thinking 99.9%.
And again, if you're the Arizona GM, mm-hmm. you're handing in your card and it says Kyler Murray, and you can sleep. Mm-hmm. You can sleep that night.
99.9. I mean,
no way.
Could you be that certain about it?
Unless the trade scenario comes into a factor. Look, at this point, you should know who you're going to take with the pick if you keep the pick. The question now is, are you going to keep the pick? And you don't know what your offers are, because you're going to go back and forth over the next 10 days with everybody on the offers. We're going to keep this pick unless we get blown away with an offer. Now, you might be talking to 1, 2, 3, 4 teams, 5 teams that want to move up to number one. And if there are several teams that want to move up to number one, it's the offer you're going to get today is going to be different from the offer you get 24 hours before the draft.
Right.
So that's the only thing that I wouldn't be certain of. I'd be certain right now that they know if they keep the pick who they're going to take. Is it Bosa or is it Murray? One of those two. But what I would say that they're not certain with is what they could trade. What would they be willing to trade the pick?
Not only in a trade for the number one pick, but what they could get for Josh Rosen in a trade. Those are two things that they probably have a guess at, but how could you know for sure right now, today, on April 15th? I had to look at my watch. I should know it's tax day. What they can get today, right now, either for the number one pick or Josh Rosen. That's where the gamesmanship is going on. Rosen, Kiper and McShay, both over the weekend said they thought Rosen is definitely worth a first-round pick.
Now, when I heard second round, I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. Now I think it's come back to reality that Josh Rosen is worth a first-round pick. So if you're Washington and you want the big splash with Daniel Snyder does, and you think about it, Giants are looking for their quarterback. The Redskins, because of Alex Smith's injury, are looking for theirs. The Eagles have theirs in Carson Wentz, and Dallas feels they have theirs in Dak. So you got to try to catch up. To me, you got to think, if that deal's available and they just do decide to take Kyler Murray, I'm giving up the 15th pick for Josh Rosen if I'm the Redskins.
I keep waiting for a deal to be made. I keep waiting for
well,
us to wake up.
Once that deal's made, then there's no suspense about number one.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And as we said last week, the Redskins have five quarterbacks, which means you definitely don't have one.
Right. So when is that deal going to be made? If a deal is to be made for Josh Rosen, at what point?
Get you on guesses?
Yeah.
Is it just next week?
Draft day? 2 days before draft day?
Yeah.
3 days?
Yeah, because those teams want to know, too. Like, if I'm Washington and I'm going to give up the 15th pick for Rosen, I mean, I need to know that you're going to do this because I got to make other plans if I'm not going to be able to do it.
Right.
So I need to know. Unless you agree to it, everything's agreed to, and we'll do it on draft day just to keep everything quiet, But this, we'll definitely do this deal, You need to at least have that assurances that that's what you're going to get if you're Washington. Because if you weren't going to, would you be willing to move up a little bit more to get Daniel Jones or to get Haskins? So you need to know, if I'm not going to get Rosen, we need a quarterback. We might use that 15th pick on a different quarterback. We might trade down. We might say, we really like Daniel Jones, but he's not, but we might be able to get him at 20. So we'll trade down a little bit and pick up an extra fourth round pick or something. And you know what I'm saying?
You have to know,
if you're a team trading for Rosen, you have to know before the draft, well before the draft, days before the draft. You have to know.
Sure. Because then it will stop you from making other deals somewhere else. There's been this thought that the Cardinals are cooling on Kyler Murray. There's this belief that with him visiting the Giants and Washington, Kyler Murray doesn't really know where he's going to go. Otherwise, why would he schedule those visits if he had a pretty good idea he was going number one overall?
Yeah, in basketball, when a player knows he's going somewhere, he stops visiting teams that are below that team that promised them.
Look at Nick Bosa. He had a visit with the Jets, canceled it. Canceled it. He knows.
One or two.
He's going one or two. He knows.
Yeah.
He's been told.
And then he deleted his Twitter account because it was pro-Trump.
That's right. He did that, too.
He got rid of all his tweets.
Yeah, well, he might go to San Francisco.
I don't know that San Francisco is going to line up with my thinking here.
There's an old phrase in the industry, know your audience. Know your audience, Nick. Know your audience. He knows. Kyler, it would appear, based off of his actions, doesn't know. Otherwise, why would you go to the Giants? You could buy an argument. The Giants. Why would you go to Washington? They're at 15. Why would you go there?
Because
they're moving up. But how far are they? Are they moving up to 3? Are they moving up to 1? They've obviously told the agent we're planning on moving up. But again, if you're Kyler Murray and you believe you're going number one overall to the Arizona Cardinals, why are you wasting your time with a team that would have to move up probably twice to come get you? Why would you waste your time with
you? You have to think that the Raiders would take him at 4 if the Cardinals don't, right?
You think so?
Yeah. And then trade Carr to somebody else?
Man, this is going to be...
I know. I just want it to be over.
You know what? I
do. I just want it to be over.
I do and I don't.
The speculation is just, wow.
I know. I just enjoy thinking about it. It's just like a puzzle to be solved, And it's just, I do actually kind of enjoy trying to solve the puzzle a little bit, look for the clues and the hints, and try to figure out who Kaiser Sose is before they tell us who Kaiser Sose is. I'm that kind of guy. I want to figure it out. Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. The self-imposed deadline ends tonight. How real is the threat? And what are the ramifications if they don't meet the deadline? Talking about one of the Cardinals' biggest rivals next on the Burns and Gambo Show. This Russell Wilson story is fascinating.
Oh, my God. I'm just hoping. Listen, nothing against Seattle. Beautiful place to visit. I hope like hell he doesn't agree to a deal tonight. And he goes somewhere else. Get him out of here. Out of this division.
What about your New York Giants?
Yeah, I'll take him in a heartbeat. He's great. I love Russell Wilson.
A ton of speculation. That's where he wants to go.
Listen, I'm wrong on a lot of things. That was one of the things that you remember in the draft. I loved Russell Wilson.
Yes, you did.
Loved Russell Wilson in the draft. Didn't understand how he wasn't a first-round pick. Wanted the Cardinals to get him. But I hope he doesn't go. I hope he doesn't get a deadline tonight, midnight. I hope they don't agree to a deal. And I hope he wants to leave. And I hope his wife, what's his wife's name? Sierra. I hope she wants to go to New York and be a model or go to Broadway plays or whatever she wants to do. And they go there or they go anywhere else. Just get him out of this division. Get him out of here.
I'm not going to lie to you. I feel almost exactly the same way.
I don't want him.
I mean, whatever it takes to get him out, go. It's a fascinating dynamic to watch. The deadline, the self-imposed deadline is tonight.
Get him out of here!
Exactly. And he's not... And he's not saying, sign me to an extension or I'm not going to show up. He's not saying that. He's like, I'll show up, sign me to an extension. Otherwise, I'm not going to sign a long-term extension with you, the Seattle Seahawks. If you don't give me a long-term deal by tonight, midnight, April 15th, I'm not signing with you long-term. Now, we can play the franchise tag game if you want for a couple of years. You're going to pay through the nose for a quarterback like me on one-year deals.
35, and then the third year is like 50-something, right?
Yeah, it's absurd.
You're going to spend, and I saw the numbers. It was crazy. But you can't do the franchise tag thing 2 years in a row. I mean, you can't do it. It's going to burn you because the numbers are just so great. I mean, it's literally $60 million for 2 years of the guy. You can't do that.
No, you can't do that.
And then the third year is like, I think it jumps to like $50 million or something crazy.
So what does he want? Here's Peter Schrager on Good Morning Football on the NFL Network saying what Wilson and his agent are looking for is just a different kind of deal.
Russell Wilson's agent is a guy named Mark Rogers.
Okay.
I worked on Russell Wilson's extension a few years ago. I remember being so interesting that Mark Rogers was agent because he has one client. Russell Wilson.
Wow.
This is a baseball player agent.
Yeah.
And he is his agent in football. And they look at things differently. And the thing that I keep on hearing about is Russell Wilson isn't looking necessarily to break the bank and do what Aaron Rodgers and beat him by a cent. Mm. Russell Wilson wants to look towards the future. So if you're saying look towards the future, what's that mean? Well, there might be gambling money involved in the NFL. There might be fantasy football money involved with the NFL. There might be more salary cap money. Instead of looking at the gross product of here is my flat deal, I want to make $35 million, there's been talk, and not from Rodgers directly, but from other agents around, that what they're talking with the Seahawks is, how about a percentage of the salary cap? How about we set it at 15% or 14%?
Can you imagine? So Russell Wilson works at a deal where every year I get 15% of what the salary cap is. You are contractually obligated to give me 15% of whatever the cap is.
Revolutionizing the contract
to a certain extent.
Revolutionizing it. The salary cap's going to go up every year. I want to get my piece of that.
And to get specific on the agent thing, I read a little bit more about that. Because this guy doesn't have any football players other than Russell Wilson. He doesn't care.
He's not trying to
grease the wheels for future clients or, hey, scratch my back on this one, I'll scratch your back somewhere down the road. He doesn't care. This is his only football client. So there's no future relationship that he's trying to protect.
He might have a lot of football clients if he gets a percentage of the salary cap.
Right.
Might have a lot of players looking at him like, okay, I want to work with you.
So it's led some people to believe that Russell Wilson at his core just doesn't want to be in Seattle. Doesn't want to be there. And that he's using this as his avenue to kind of let them know, look, I know you're not going to sign me to this deal, so I don't want to be, so I'm going to use this to get myself out of here.
So basically give them an offer that they have to refuse.
Indeed.
Happens a lot on the other side.
Yep.
Ownership gives, and I'll give you a perfect example. I was right in the middle of all of this. The Phoenix Suns made Amari Stoudemire an offer he had to refuse. But you're able to go out there and say, we tried to keep him.
Sure.
We made him an offer. We're going to pay him a lot of money. But that contract to Amari Stoudemire was simply based on being healthy.
Mm-hmm.
If you play this many games, you get this much money. If you play this many games, you get this much. If you play this many, you get this much. If you miss, you don't get as much. Amari had to take the $100 million from the Knicks because his son's contract wasn't as great as that because it had parameters in there based on being healthy.
So to your point, in reverse, Russell Wilson and his agent might be making an offer to the Seattle Seahawks that they, like Amari,
have to refuse.
We have to turn this offer to we cannot give you a contract that guarantees you 15% of the salary cap.
So then what do you do if you're Seattle?
Well,
do you franchise tag him for 2 years and then you have him for three this year and then two more? Or do you try to trade him and get something for him and then you give up, you know, you trade him, but you get something for him, but you don't have a star quarterback.
A lot of times the mock drafts are sort of a reflection of what the marketplace looks like. Have you seen some of the crazy mock drafts today and what they have Seattle doing with Russell Wilson?
Damn, trading him.
They have them. I saw one on CBS Sports where they have Seattle trading Russell Wilson to the Giants for the sixth pick.
Ooh.
Seattle then takes the sixth pick and trades it to the Jets for the third pick.
So they move up
and
twice.
Takes Kyler Murray when the Cardinals don't take Kyler Murray.
Oh, man, this is absolutely crazy. I mean, this is borderline reckless.
Okay, that'll be the most exciting NFL draft we've ever been a part of.
Can you imagine? Happened.
It would be the most exciting NFL draft ever. If Russell Wilson is traded and then they move up and they end up with Kyler Murray, like, are you kidding me? So today's the deadline. It's midnight. He's got 1 year left on his contract, $87.6 million deal. 1 year. How old is he now?
Russell Wilson is 29 years old.
Is he 29?
Old,
okay.
I think he's 29. Jordan's going to do it quick. He's 30? Okay.
30.
Yeah, he'll turn 31 at the end of November.
Still 4 or 5 years of his prime left. He's still good.
Yep, plenty of his prime left.
Dan Orlovsky on SportsCenter said, I don't even think it's essential for Seattle to sign Wilson at this point.
Well, I don't know if it's very essential for their organization. I know that sounds crazy, but models in the NFL matter. We always hear just about the Patriots way, but Seattle has their own model as well. Their model is to run the football and play great defense and then play action pass. And they don't believe, John Schneider, their general manager, and Pete Carroll, don't believe that they need a great quarterback to do that. They've already won a Super Bowl with a guy that they had in a reduced value, if we want to call it a cheap price, in Russell Wilson. So it's a dangerous and slippery slope because I don't know at what point the importance of the quarterback got diminished in the NFL, but everybody now thinks that we could just get a quarterback that's inexpensive and will be really good. And we've only seen two teams successful with
it. It's not that the value has been diminished, but I think people more and more, teams more and more, are looking at the rookie quarterback model and going, man, that makes so much sense.
We get to get all these other players. We got a rookie contract.
Yep. It makes so much sense to have a quarterback on a rookie contract because it just lets us spend on everything else if we want to. So again, back to your point.
Our own players that we like. We don't have to lose any of them.
So if Seattle doesn't value their quarterback that much, and Russell Wilson and his agent know that,
okay, but
they can make an offer to Seattle that Seattle has to say no to. And the minute that happens, you know, I'm not signing long term here then. Now Seattle has to act on that.
But if Seattle trades Russell Wilson to the Giants, they got to cut Eli Manning. They just gave him a bonus.
I know, and that part it gets.
They
a little
literally
sticky.
Just yep. gave him a bonus like last week, like a roster bonus. How could they trade him to like the Giants are just committed to Eli Manning for this year? I don't know that this makes sense. Okay, we got Russell Wilson, and so do you trade Eli Manning? But you have one shot at getting Russell. If I'm the Giants, I have one shot at getting Russell Wilson that I didn't know about a week ago. I got to take it. Sorry, Eli. Hey, don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way. I thank you for the two Super Bowls. Here's the numbers real quick. $30.6 million for next year is the franchise tag. Then it goes up to $35 million. And in the third year would be $52 million. So if you want to keep him for 4 years, you got to pay him what you're paying him this year, which I don't know what that number is. And then you have to pay him $65 plus $52, like $117 million or something like that.
If you're going to franchise tag him year
for 3 years.
After year. Yeah, yeah. The Arizona Cardinals' second round pick is basically another first round pick. So who could they be targeting with such valuable real estate? We'll give you two more names to watch for at number 33 overall next on the Burns and Gambo Show. The drama and the mystery about the first overall pick in the NFL draft for the Cardinals is intensifying, and frankly, I don't know how much more intense it can get, but there are two dramatic schools of thought out there. Number one, you got the Todd McShays and the Mel Kiper specifically saying, I'm 99.9% sure Kyler Murray's going to the Cardinals, number one. And then you got a guy like Daniel Jeremiah, former NFL scout, who says just based off the fact that Murray is visiting all these other teams, I'm reducing my confidence level
from 90 to 60,
from 90% to 60% that Kyler Murray is going to go to the Cardinals, right?
Man,
confidence is not high. I repeat, confidence is not high. So it's just ratcheting up every single day. We get closer to this thing, but in the midst of all that, there is still very important real estate the Cardinals need to make sure they take care of, namely the first pick. The second day of the NFL draft, the 33rd overall.
Yeah, the whole draft is so important for a team that won 3 games last year, and we downplay it, or we just overplay the first round pick is what we do. We overplay the first round pick because that's what people are so excited about. But it's really the whole draft. What do they got, 10 picks overall in this draft?
10 picks overall, yes.
I mean, it's, you know, this needs to be a good draft. I mean, Steve Keim needs to nail this draft, second round, third round, fourth round, fifth round. They got to come in with players. Players that could help. A lot of guys. Now, we're going to mention players. We mentioned two. In the at 2:30, we're going to mention two right now. These are players that are strong possibilities for the Cardinals in the second round, the first pick in the second round. Now, we've mentioned two already, and we'll add two more.
The two that we mentioned already were NC State center Garrett Bradbury as a guy who could be considered for the 33rd pick overall. We also mentioned Mississippi wide receiver A.J. Brown as a guy who could be 33rd overall. We're going to talk about two more, and once again, we're going into the offensive lineman well here for the next name, and that is Boston College guard Chris Lindstrom.
Yeah, 4-year starter who improved every year, broke out as one of the nation's best guards the past 2 years, has also played tackle. He's had a lot of visits lately. I mean, he's been all over the place. The Redskins, the Broncos, the Eagles, the Falcons, they're all looking at him. Now, again, he's 6'5", he's 305, he played right guard at Boston College, he also started at right tackle, so he's a guy, plug-and-play guy, can come in right away, has the ability to play tackle, has the ability to play guard, just a good, versatile offensive lineman, so that's a guy that'll be considered with that first pick in the second round. So Chris Lindstrom is from Boston College, is one of those guys that you're really going to just keep your eye on him. And again, this isn't like we're not guessing here. This isn't guesswork. These are players that are going to be in that area on the Cardinals board, somewhere in that 30 to 40 range, or, you know, 25 to 35 range, probably that more of the 25 to 35 range. These are the guys that are going to be in that group right there. Some of these guys could fall. Now, some of these guys we'll mention could be picked in the first round. But these are guys that are going to be, you know, either on their board, guys that they're looking at that are late first round picks, and then early, you know, and an early second round picks. And which one of those guys could fall to them?
It's interesting. We've talked about three names so far. The two that we mentioned at 2:30, and then Lindstrom's name just a second ago. So far, all three checking in at positions of major, major need for the Arizona Cardinals. Which, I understand the old cliche: you don't draft for need, you draft for best player available. Right? That's the draft cliche. Need does factor into this on some level. It
sure
has to factor into this.
You want to take best available, but you're not like, but you do.
But if you've got two players graded about the same, and one
need
is at a position you need, and
that
one
happens
is not,
a lot,
you go with the guy you need.
Yeah, not yet. Yeah, of course, yeah. And there's often players that are just so close that then you could go need. You know, there are sometimes you just have players graded out with the same grade. I've got this guy at an 89.4, and I got this guy at an 89.4, and you just go with the best player.
I want you to roll out the other name for this part of the show, and then I want to kind of ask you a question about a hypothetical in the first round with them picking in the second round. The other name to be revealed in this as part of a guy they're looking at is, and we've talked about him before, Oklahoma offensive lineman Cody Ford.
Yeah, you could slot him in as the left guard. I mean, really nasty, nasty player. Plays with a mean streak. He could get out. He could pull. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, a lot of teams are going to like. And now, obviously, there's the Kyler Murray connection and having played at Oklahoma. But this is just a nasty dude. I mean, he's just mean, and he loves to play football, and he's just tough as nails. And so that's one of the things that a lot of teams like him. So Cody Ford. So that's two offensive linemen. So it's interesting that I'm giving you a list of five names right now. And I'm not really calling this the Gamble Five just yet, because I got a web department in here. Is this the Gamble Five? These are five guys that will be considered if they're available at pick 33. They will all be highly considered if they're available. Now, there's also the chance that they trade into the first round or they trade out of that 33rd pick. So let's not forget that. But I'll finalize my Gambo 5 sometime like later, either later this week or first thing next week, because I just want to play it out and see if there's anybody else that jumps out. There's still workouts to be had.
Sure.
There's still a lot of evaluation going on. But these are five that I could give you right now that will be under consideration with the 33rd overall pick.
Yeah, and I'm glad you clarified that, because I know the guys in the website.
But I just want to put it up. Yeah.
They're looking for that branding. They're looking for that marketing. They want a Gambo 5. We're not quite there yet. Couple of scenarios to talk about here. Number one, as it relates to the second round, at least for me. Number one is, if they stay at number one and don't trade down and accumulate extra picks, I think, and this is just me, if they stay at number one, I think that increases the odds they'll move out of this spot to try to pick up extra picks. Because all you have to do is go back and look at the recent history of the NFL draft. This is a highly coveted spot for teams to trade out of to pick up extra picks somewhere else, right? Especially if they've got a lot of guys on their board and they only need to move down a few spots, five, maybe six, and they're confident they're going to get a guy they like. If the Cardinals don't move down and pick up extra picks in the first round, I'd be convinced they're going to move out of this pick at number 33 and get extra picks.
Okay.
Just absolutely convinced of it. I think they'll do
that. So as of now, we've given you offensive tackle Cody Ford. We've given you the guard Chris Lindstrom. We've given you the center Garrett Bradbury, and we've given you a wide receiver in A.J. Brown. We're going to give you one more name at 430, one more name that's going to be considered with the Cardinals' second-round pick. So these are four guys. Three of them are offensive linemen. One of them is a wide receiver. Now, depending on the name I come up with at 430, does it lead you to think that maybe they could go defensive lineman with the first pick, since there's no defensive lineman with the second pick right now?
I don't know. I mean, if we're...
Something to think about. I have not given you a defensive tackle or a pass rusher yet. I got one more name I'm going to give you at 430.
Here's another scenario I can see happening, mm-hmm. Okay? And here's what happens. And again, I'm just kind of going with trends here from the NFL draft. Here's another trend that happens every year. We get to the end of the first round, and inevitably, there are three or four guys that the quote-unquote experts, oh my God, I can't believe that player is still available.
Right.
Oh my God, I can't believe that player is still available. It's... The end of the first round, things tend to get a little squirrely in terms of guys and where they get picked and things like that. I guarantee you, there are going to be players available at number 33 that we're not expecting to be available at 33. What positions do they play, and are they rated so highly on the Cardinals board that they turn their back on what they need to take a best player available at 33 because they cannot believe, oh my God, I can't believe that guy's there at number 33. He was supposed to go in the first round. He didn't. We got to get him, even though it's not a position we have anywhere close to a need for.
So that's why it's very likely, and I just want to rephrase what I was saying, because it's very likely the guys I'm giving you are going to be rated somewhere between like 20 and 30 on their board. Okay? Because it's going to drop. It's not, nobody's going to be rated 35 because they're going to get better than that. So the guys I'm giving you are going to be rated somewhere in that 20 to 30 range on their board. And then they're going to come in because one of those guys that they have rated at 20, 21, 22, 23 is going to be available at 33. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
So the guys I'm giving you are guys, some of these guys are going to go in the first round. So I'm giving you five guys right now. I'm going to give you one more at 430. Some of these guys will go in the first round. I promise you, not all of them. These are, so the guy that drops could be the guy they get at 33. I said before, it's probably 25 to 35. That's wrong, because they're not going to take a guy at 35, because obviously they're picking at 33. So these are guys that are going to be somewhere in their 20 to 30 range, not 31, 32, 33, but somewhere 20 to 30. And they can say, wow, we have this guy rated at 22 and he's available at 33. We're going to grab him. It's great value.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, NBA playoffs round one is underway, and the coaching carousel in the league starting to spin a little bit faster right now, and we all kind of have our eyes still on that Phoenix Suns job. We'll talk about that coming up next on the Burns and Gambo show. News that will surprise absolutely no one. So much so we didn't even like play the breaking news sound or anything. Duke freshman Zion Williamson declared his eligibility for the NBA draft.
What? He's not coming back?
Stunner.
I mean, what? They didn't even win the championship. They didn't...
Stunner.
Final Four? He doesn't want to accomplish some great goals at Duke?
Apparently not. wants to go make
kids don't want to win championships.
He wants to go make money is what he wants to do. So you got that news coming out of the NBA. It was a busy first weekend around the NBA, the opening round of the playoffs. A few upsets on Saturday.
The New Jersey, the Brooklyn Nets, almost said New Jersey. The Brooklyn Nets and the Orlando Magic in the East.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy in the East.
Yep.
I mean, DJ Augustine with the three-point. I was watching a little bit of the that Orlando-Toronto game. Orlando was up big. Then Toronto had a nice run. They came back. But then DJ knocked down the winning shot. And how about our boy Jared Dudley? Just shutting down Philadelphia. Joel Embiid and D'Angelo Russell went crazy. And the Nets went into Philly and won that game. That was a big upset, too.
The Nets go into Philly. They win 111-102 on Saturday. That's a big upset. The Magic going to Toronto beat the Raptors 104-100.
That's a bigger upset.
Huge. I mean, it's just one game, obviously. But Toronto's got this horrible playoff history of just underperforming this time of year. And the Magic, and some have made the case for, like, this is in some ways why it's good to play. They've basically been playing playoff basketball for the last month and a half of the regular season, right? So they went in on this momentum of just having to win every single night just to get there. They played with a lot more urgency, a lot more desperation, and they're kind of going same old in Toronto right now. And it might not be a big upset, but the Spurs going into Denver and beating the Nuggets on the road in that altitude.
Yeah.
I mean, seed-wise,
I don't know.
That is enough. It's the
Spurs. I mean, are you shocked by that?
We always expect the Spurs to do well this time of year. I'm still a little surprised by it. Yeah. The Nuggets. Nuggets are good.
I guess so.
They're good.
I guess so. Harden and the Rockets rolled. Kevin Durant got kicked out of the game.
Yeah, he talked about that afterwards.
I don't want to disappoint my coaches and the fan base and owners who expect me to be out on the floor, so I apologize.
That was him today apologizing.
Getting into it with Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, and then Brian Windhorst also talking about how the biggest threat to the Warriors maybe this whole postseason is just technicals.
Well, Durant would have gotten suspended for an 83rd game had there been an 83rd game because he had too many technicals twice in the regular season. Yes. Now he's got five techs left in potentially, I don't know, 20-some games. We already saw what happens when you get suspended to the Warriors. You can't beat them when they're at full power. You take away this out. This, to me, this is like one of the biggest threats to the Warriors championship is the suspension at the wrong time. It should be something that they focus on every day.
Well, that was the Draymond Green issue a few years ago, right? His suspension in the middle of the finals kind of opened the door for LeBron and the Cavs to do what they did. In Philly, you mentioned how upset the fans were there, upset with the losing, upset with Ben Simmons. He had a reaction to the fans booing the local team.
I mean, if you're going to boo, then stay on that side. So I feel if you're a Sixers fan, you're going to boo, stay on that side.
He kind of walked that back a little bit
today. Stand
on
the side?
Stand on the side, like their side, not our side, basically.
Oh.
Basically what
they didn't play well. I mean, Simmons didn't play well. I mean, Redick struggled. Jimmy Butler was really good in that game. And, you know, the Nets are good. Like they got talent. I mean, LeVert coming off the bench now, and D'Angelo Russell's been killing it. I mean, it's a good team. Like, that's a good basketball team. Like, you know, I was talking with Dudley before the series. Like, man, if we could just take one out of two, like, we got a shot in this thing. You know, Embiid's not right, and so now there was a little trash talking going on back and forth afterwards. So we'll see how Philly responds in game two. But, you know, Philly was 3 of 25 from three-point range. I mean, they didn't shoot their free throws well. They didn't shoot from three-point range. And the Nets were, man, 42% from three-point range. 92% on their free throws. The Nets played really well. They deserved that game.
And then, of course, in the middle of that game, too, you had Amir Johnson looking at his cell phone, checking on a text message on the bench with Embiid right there.
Oh, that's terrible.
Here's what Embiid said about that.
Obviously, I wasn't on my phone. I just looked down because he said that his daughter was extremely sick, and he was checking on her. I don't know. I just looked but he was checking on his daughter. She's sick.
That was Embiid's explanation for Johnson, why Johnson was checking his phone in the middle of the game, checking on a sick daughter while he was sitting on the bench, which is...
Not buying it? I'm not buying it.
I hate to say it. No, I'm not.
I'm totally not buying it.
Because it just seems, you know, it just seems like one of those things that you...
Kids get sick. I mean, if it's really bad, then don't be there.
Yeah.
Don't be there. If not, you got halftime that you could check. or you could have you could have an attendant check in. You know, hey, do me a favor. I want updates. Give me updates on my kid every 15 minutes. I want to check. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things. I'm totally not buying it. But, you know, if Cliff Kingsbury had his way, I mean, you know, we would have like these timeouts in between, you know, in between the first quarter. We're going to a television. It's a cell phone timeout.
Cell phone timeout.
Yes. We're going to have television timeouts and cell phone timeouts for these players. All right, everybody, take a break. You guys got 2 minutes to check your cell phones and return to action.
Can you imagine?
No commercial break. Each coach will have, you know, 5 timeouts, and then each player will have 1 cell phone timeout. Each player gets 1 cell phone timeout. You can only use 3 in a game, but that's what we're going to get to. Cell phone timeouts, coaches timeouts, TV timeouts.
Cell phone timeouts.
It's coming. Yes. The cell phone timeouts are coming. They're coming.
Sacramento Kings made it official today. They hired Luke Walton as their new head coach. We knew that was coming. It had been rumored for days after he got let go by the LA Lakers and after Dave Yeager got let go by the Sacramento Kings. There's also a report out there that Dave Yeager, when he was the coach of Sacramento, apparently he wanted Luka Doncic over Marvin Bagley III and was overruled on that one, and that he never, quote, never seemed to connect with prized rookie Marvin Bagley III, leaving the second overall pick to wonder privately if Yeager even liked him. Harry Giles, another player the front office had faith in, couldn't crack Yeager's rotation earlier in the season, and sources said Giles was a player the coach did not communicate well with or believe in. Now, close quote, this is the kind of stuff that an organization will leak out to the media to justify firing a guy who does not look like he should be fired.
Sure.
This is standard operating procedure for an organization. Oh, you know what? He was a bad guy.
First chapter in the book.
Yep, he was a bad guy. He did this wrong.
Didn't get along.
Yeah, he didn't want Marvin Bagley. He didn't get along with the guys. I mean, that and so what you want to believe is up to you when it comes to something like that, but I'm telling you, that is standard operating procedure for franchises in any sport. When they fire a guy that the rest of the world goes, you weren't supposed to fire him, you start leaking the negative stuff about him into the workplace to let everyone know why you did it.
Is it ideal to have the general manager and the head coach on the same page? Sure. Is it necessary? No. It's not necessary. Plenty of teams can win with it. Not every front office and has a great relationship between the coach and the GM. It doesn't happen that way. Not everybody's on the same page. Sometimes his disagreements and his arguments, and coach wants to do things his way, and GM wants to do things his way, and that's what happens.
Yeah,
it's better when you've got a good working relationship, and everybody stays in their lanes and understand what they're doing. But there's plenty of teams that have won without that dynamic.
Yeah, with the coaching wheels going round and round, it does seem very interesting that it was a very quiet weekend on that front for the Phoenix Suns. There has not been much of a peep out of that organization about their coach, which could lead someone to believe that maybe there's going to be no news at all when it comes to Igor Kokoshkov, that he's just going to be back.
I'm sure still evaluating. I told you last week that Dave Yeager would not be a target for them if they had an opening. I told you Luke Walton would not be a target if they had an opening. Right now, they don't have an opening. They've got Igor Kokoshkov as their head coach, and I'm sure they're still evaluating everything after the exit interviews, and they've got a new guy in Jeff Bauer on board, so I'm sure that they'll make a decision real soon what direction they're going to go in.
Tomorrow is Ticket Window Tuesday. It's presented by Arizona Central Credit Union. We're giving you the chance to win a pair of tickets to the 9th annual Larry Fitzgerald Double Play Celebrity Softball Game on April 27th. Be listening at 7:15 a.m., 10:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 4:15 p.m. for your chance to win. The experts have been predicting it for weeks, but here we are a week and a half away from the draft. Just how confident are you that the Cardinals are going to take Kyler Murray number one? Talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.